Welcome to the Dearly Woven podcast. I am your host, Casey Dow. This is the podcast where we dive into the stories of shepherds and makers. So if you love all things sheep and wool, then this is the podcast for you. Hey there, everyone. I hope you all are doing well. On today's episode, I have not one, but two guests. I chatted with the wonderful mother-daughter duo behind the yarn shop Flying Fibers. I was so excited to speak with Jerry and Irina because they too have a special place in their hearts for long wools and a passion for saving rare and heritage breeds. From Jerry's story of falling in love with sheep and Irina's experiences growing up in the sheep and wool community to sharing about their flock of long wools and how two sweet Shetlands joined in the mix to their yarn shop, virtual fiber festivals, and more. This episode is packed full of so much woolly goodness. So without further ado, let's jump right into the interview.
Thank you, Jerry and Irina, for coming on the podcast today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
I would love if you two could start off by doing a quick introduction of who you are, and then each of you kind of tell your stories on how you came to fall in love with sheep and the journey you've had just getting into the sheep world and raising sheep.
I'll go ahead and get started since I'm the oldest. I'm Jerry Robinson Lawrence, and I'm actually a city kid from the city of Buffalo in New York State, but I was always the one that was in love with animals and always making things with my hands. So I wasn't really familiar with farm animals growing up. I only would see them at the Erie County Fair, but that would be my favorite place to be, not on the Midway, but with the animals. So something was always in there. And I did grow up wearing wool because I come from an Irish Catholic American background. So wool, which we would refer to back then as very itchy wool. Now I would say that it was strong, sturdy outerwear because I know better, was what we all wore. We wore Aran sweaters in the winter, wool coats, wool hats, wool mittens, the whole nine yards. And then I'll try and make this brief. I met my husband when I was in graduate school for art at the Art Institute of Chicago, and he was from England. And my first trip to visit his family, out the plane window, I saw these little white dots everywhere. And I could not believe how many sheep I was seeing. And I just couldn't wait to land. Of course, they're not absolutely everywhere, but there were a lot of them. And one of the first places my in-laws took me was to a South of England show. That's essentially their agricultural fairs. And I thought I'd died and gone to heaven because people were shearing sheep and there was no Midway. So it was like my Erie County Fair on steroids and on the animal front. People were knitting directly with roving. The yarns were spectacular. They had finished garments. They were spinning. And that started it. And then we went on a vacation to the north of England, and I found a knitted sweater, that cardigan that was made with Wensleydale. They had no yarn, but I kept going back. The sweater was 3 to 4 times too big for me, but I kept going back the whole week, and I ended up buying it because of the sheen and the feel. And I still have it to this day, and it's really like a giant bathrobe, but that was the start of it for me. So I'll let Irina cut in here now. It was some time before we got sheep, but I'll let her tell her story.
Yeah. So hi, everybody. My name is Irina Lawrence Mathias, and I am the daughter of this mother-daughter duo. I guess because with my dad being from England and my mom doing everything and anything woolly my entire life, I just kind of didn't really have a choice. I was just drawn to the sheep. I take that back. My sister can do all fiber arts and she's amazing at handling the animals, but she is a cosmetologist by trade. So that is more her speed. So I decided to fall into the sheep and wool side of things. And I grew up going to fiber festivals and, you know, helping customers, you know, like I wrote out the receipts and bagged people's purchases at Maryland Sheep and Wool when I was a kid. And I was in 4-H. And then when I was probably like, I think I was like 11 or 12. I must have been 11 turning 12. We got a crossbred generic kind of Coupworth Corriedale cross named Noel. And then later that July, we drove to Michigan and picked up our first three breeding ewes of Wensleydales. So it kind of hasn't stopped since then. So yeah, so that's kind of how we got started.
And Jerry, was it that sweater, the Wensleydale sweater, that drew you to wanting to own that breed of sheep?
Yes. I could not stop, sounds weird, feeling it and looking at it because it has this silky feel to it. We giggle when people come in our shop and they'll pick up our Wensleydale and our Yorkshire Medley yarns and they'll say, oh, this is so soft. And it's like, no, it's not. It's Wensleydale isn't the coarse range, but it's silky because of the length of the fiber. The luster that it has a halo. There's something so magnificent about it. And then when I started to do research and I saw what the Wensleydale looked like, that sold me as well with these beautiful, what appear to be dreadlocks, but they're not knotted. They're these beautiful, long, they call it a pearl, and wavy, curly sumptuousness that can grow up to 14 inches. And I was really ignorant being a city kid. You know, ignorance is bliss because I went into this when a friend said, you can keep sheep at my place. So we drove all the way to Michigan, got three ewes, and they can be 250 pounds. And I had no idea what I was doing. And I did rely on my friend for quite some time, but then we decided to move the sheep because that friend was far away. And another friend said, okay, so I'll let you board your sheep here as long as you take care of mine. Oh, she had beautiful Cotswolds, so also long wools. So I had to learn really quickly how to take care of everybody and do it on my own in order to be able to have my sheep. And that's when I started breeding. So yes, it was falling in love with the Wensleydale. Sheep, I think, were always there because I did love Noel, the sheep that we first acquired, but the Wensleydale, the rare breed, the saving heritage breed animals, because there's so much we can learn from them and diversity is so important. So yes, it was that sweater that started it all.
And now you have Wensleydales, and what are the other breeds that you have?
We also have Leicester Longwools. That's Irina's story. And we do have one Teeswater, but we decided we didn't want to spread ourselves too thin and have too many. So the Wensleydales and the Leicesters were number one. And then we were at a friend's farm, and two little independent Shetlands meandered through all the sheep and all the people. One put her head on my shoulder. We were crouched down, obviously. And one put his head on Irina's shoulder. Not once, not twice, but the whole weekend. So we now have Shetlands.
You had to take them home. Yeah. Oh, that's sweet. Irina, do you want to tell your story on how you came to get the Leicesters?
Yeah, so the Leicester Longwool sheep kind of just fell into my lap, essentially, and I have to thank my mom for it, because we are breed representatives for the North American Wensleydale sheep at the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival. And when I was approached by the Leicester Longwool Sheep Breeders Association, they had seen us multiple times, whether it was at Rhinebeck or we did Mother Earth News Fair with our rare breed sheep and stuff. So they'd seen me over a few years. And, you know, at the time I was anywhere from the age of like 14 to 16. And I, you know, a teenager hustling sheep saying, you really need to try these rare breeds, you know, you knit with their yarn, buy their wool, save these amazing breeds. And so they kind of picked me out and actually gifted me a breeding pair of Leicesters in 2013. And then I also became a junior board member that same year. And now I work behind the scenes. We don't breed as much. We are mainly preservation through education, but also the fiber side of it. So we really keep enough to keep us in yarn to educate people that way as well. But I work kind of behind the scenes for their social media and on their website website just to kind of keep the marketing going of the Leicester Longwool sheep. But I have had them for almost 8 years now, and I absolutely adore them. They're very personable. I feel like the sheep that we raise, they all have their own personalities. The Wensleydales are definitely, you know, they're surprisingly like, they're love bugs, I guess, is how I want to say. Like all of the Wensleydales that we've had, except for maybe like one ram, they've just always wanted to like kind of be involved and just like check it out. The Shetlands are like your best friends. They're like dogs, but the Leicesters are these interesting, independent creatures, and they're friendly. They don't shy away from chin scratches and back scratches, but they're very regal in a sense. And I feel like the Wensleydales have that personality trait as well. And they've got amazing fiber, which is a positive because we are fiber artists kind of first and foremost as well. So.
And with breeding season coming up, do you guys have quite a few that you're expecting? Have you already started lambing yet?
No, we lamb a little bit later because it's very interesting. As city kid that I was, I grew up in the suburbs, so you heard me say that they were at different people's houses for a while. And then my friend had sold, so we were boarding on an Amish farm. And then we did that for several years, but he had to make money. So horses came into the picture, and they would come and go. So they would fight for top horse, and they would be standing and kicking and way too close to our precious lambikins.
Yeah.
So we bought land about 5.5 years ago, and we had to drive 35 minutes each way for nearly 5 years to take care of them. So we bred later so that they wouldn't freeze to death. For some reason, our lambs really like to come when it's in zero and at 6 a.m. So right. These little wet things dropped to the ground and wasn't always great. And they, you know, didn't want to have them in the barn. God forbid. So then just a year and a half ago at the age of 57 was when I finally got to live on my farm. So just a mile away from our land, we were able to buy a small farm. It's just 2.5 acres, and then the land is 8.5. And the homestead has a huge barn. And it was fenced for sheep. Couldn't have been more perfect. But I'm not very good at moving my sheep along. I fall in love with them. So
that's why we still have a Teeswater ram, even though we don't breed Teeswaters.
Yeah. They're like potato chips. And, you know, everybody's like Irina said, they're all very different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my husband keeps saying, okay, can I make mutton? No, that's Freddy. You can't have Freddy. I've had him for too long. That's actually Irina. So we have two little Shetlands that will deliver this spring. Mid-March is about when they should arrive. And they're pretty spectacular. The Shetlands, even though the Wensleydales will always be my first love, the Shetlands come in 11 colors and 33, I believe, varieties. So they are like potato chips. You can't have just one because the colors and patterns are spectacular. So these two little girls look like cows in the field. They're called Cape Fleckets, and they were bred to a Golmaget. So I have no idea what I'll get, but as an artist, it's like, ooh, color, difference, variety.
Oh, yes. It's going to be like Christmas when they come.
Yep. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that does. It opens up a whole new thing when you go to get the fiber processed. Do you guys do a lot of mill processing or do you do any hand spinning as well?
We both can hand spin, but we do have, you know, we do have a full service bricks and mortar yarn shop. Our work yarn is a really big portion of kind of what sets us apart from the other shops in the area where we are. And so we do get quite a bit spun at a fairly local mill to us. It's about 50 miles there and back, which is a pretty small carbon footprint considering our shearer is actually my neighbor. And so we live about 15 minutes from where the sheep do. I didn't know that when I moved. We figured that out later, but it's kind of a nice little footprint. You know, like Nate travels 15 minutes to go shear all the sheep, and then I drive 50 miles to take it up to the mill to be processed, you know, fairly locally. So we've got a pretty small carbon footprint on our flock yarn. So we do quite a bit of mill work with our sheep directly, for sure.
And I would love to talk about the yarn shop, and if you could tell me like what made you decide to open one, and if you want to share everything that you carry in the shop.
Yeah, Mom, do you want to go ahead with that?
Well, I'll talk about how we started, and then I'll switch it over to Irina because she pretty much runs the store entirely now. It started because a friend and I, the friend who first allowed me to have sheep on her farm, we realized that we were going to all these fiber festivals. At one point, I was doing a lot of small festivals as well in the whole mid-Atlantic and Northeast. So I think the biggest was 13 in a year. And we realized, though, that we had all this product, and then we would take it home and stuff it in the cellar until the next show. So we started to help a friend who opened a shop, and the shop didn't last long, but we realized that we worked really well together. And since I had a full-time job and I'd saved money, I could open the shop and cover it for 2 years if she was willing to run it in exchange for selling her own products and not giving me any of the money. So it really did start as purely British wools from me. We imported Wensleydale. That's partly how we started on the fiber show circuit, and I hand dye a lot of yarn. I forget that there was a whole period prior to us having our own yarns, but I specialized in Wensleydale, and that is still primarily my specialty. So we ran that for several years. It was sort of a studio as well. And we were like, well, if it's open, it's open. Well, all of a sudden we got this reputation for being the store with the weird hours. We're like, oh, we're not really a store. So we kind of became one. We knew we wanted to stand apart. There were 8 yarn shops within a 20-mile radius. So we had to do something different. So having our own products, because my friend raised Icelandics and Angora goats and rabbits. So we were wool oriented, wool, natural fiber oriented, and we wanted to stand out. So that's where it was with the English. And then we sought after companies like Brooklyn Tweed because of their transparency, and they're based in America. So I'll let Ree jump in here now, though, so she can talk further. She's the whole business side of it. I'm the artist who says, "Ooh, there's a hole. Let's put something in it."
So my mom and her friend opened up our shop, Flying Fibers, in November of 2009. So everything kind of happened in 2009. We got our first sheep, we got our first set of Wensleydales, and then we opened up the shop. And so we opened in 2009, and we tried really hard to make what we wanted, which was kind of like traceable, real wool, British fibers, American made fibers. We tried to make that work, but at the time, I think that there was just not necessarily, the market didn't understand how important those things were for the wool industry. You think at the, you know, the late 2000s, we were kind of coming off the era of eyelash and novelty yarns. And so we worked really hard to just, you know, kind of keep everything moving. And I talk quite a bit with Mom about this. So I took over doing the books, and I started working a good number of shifts at the shop in 2014. And then I actually decided while I was in university then that I wanted to just completely take over everything. So I swapped my major from genetics to marketing and accounting, which seems like quite a big jump. But we talk quite often about how like 2015 to 2017 actually really felt like the rebirth of who we were as a shop, but also as like wool providers. In 2016, we released our first commercial yarn line, Yorkshire Medley, It's a roaring success, if I do say so myself, in the terms of small batch hand-dyed yarn. We import raw wool from England, and then we have it custom manufactured for us at different commercial mills around the United States. And then it gets shipped back to us on cones, where I wind it into skeins and then send it to my mom to be hand-dyed. So we really enjoy that. And so 2016, we released Yorkshire Medley. And then in 2017, we actually got wholesale accounts. We were granted wholesale accounts with Brooklyn Tweed and Quince and Company. And that really just kind of sealed the identity of our shop. And so really the things that we carry are Brooklyn Tweed, our yarns, our yarns from our flock, and Quince and Co. We do work with West Yorkshire Spinners based out of England to have some of their Wensleydale and Blue-Faced Leicester yarns in our shop. But we really do, we focus on the kind of like American-made companies, which is really awesome. So I still feel like we're a fairly new shop, even though we just celebrated our 11-year bricks and mortar anniversary. But I feel like it's because everything we really were looking to achieve in 2009 kind of fully came into fruition in 2017. And the market was just different almost 10 years later. And it wasn't weird to pay, you know, I mean, Brooklyn Tweed isn't the cheapest yarn. It's, you know, on average, $14 a skein, but it wasn't weird to buy a sweater's worth of that anymore. And so it really, it feels good. It feels like people are actually listening about how important the sheep world is. And it, you know, gives me hope for the future for sure.
I would have to agree. It really was an uphill battle. I mean, people were not interested in the wool. It was just, oh, I'm allergic to wool. It's itchy. I don't hear that phrase very much anymore. And no. That was really the norm when we opened. And it's like, well, where's your washable? We have one washable product in the store, and that's because we want to support our state. And it's the last large scale mill in the state. But other than that, and we do have cottons, we have a Appalachian Baby, which is an American organic cotton and plied yarn company. So we have a couple others, but our focus really is natural fibers.
Yeah, natural wools, I would say.
Wool more so.
Yeah, we have people coming in looking for like silk and alpaca, but the companies we now work with, they don't make that kind of stuff, you know. It's, and we do, we have a good number of alpaca farms just in this area. And so my thing is, you know, well, you know, Jerry and I are members of the wool industry. We are sheep breeders, and therefore we're going to let the alpaca breeders up the street who have little farm stores bring in the stuff that they grow. So, you know, we try to spread the wealth a little bit, because farming and marketing your products is not the easiest gig to decide to fall into. And so if I can send somebody 15 minutes up the road to go see the alpacas and buy yarn from the farmer, that is, I am more than happy to lose that sale to give it to another person in the fiber industry, because I know what they're doing every morning at, you know, 6 a.m. as they go out to feed and, you know, take care of everybody. So, you know, we can relate with them. So.
Right. And I think it's so special that you're a mother-daughter duo, and, you know, you are doing this, and that's such an accomplishment that, you know, you just celebrated 11 years, and what you are doing is helping, you know, this process of people realizing where their wool is coming from or using more natural fibers and everything. So I think it's also wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I would love if you two could share what your experiences were like doing the virtual fiber festivals this past year.
Well, you know, I'm a teacher by day. So I teach art at our local university, art and design at Millersville University. And so educating somebody is really easy to me and comes naturally. I kind of can't help myself. Sometimes Irina will go, you don't have to educate me on this subject. Thank you. Yeah. But so the virtual component, I had to switch mid-March to virtual for my job. And I, because I teach design, I already know how to make a good looking presentation. And I turn on my actress self. I'm really very introverted, but the whole family laughs when I turn on Professor Robinson, as they call it. And so because we feel like we're educating, not marketing, and that I never had a business plan. I had a mission from the store. Mm-hmm. And I'm laughing because business people would just, you know, slap their forehead and go, oh, is she kidding? But that's who I am. And that's what I wanted. So they talk about on these virtual festivals that people pop in and pop out. They stay for our entire presentations. We don't get it, but they stay. So we're so grateful and so thankful because they kept us alive this year.
Yeah.
Irina quickly pulled on her business hat and did what she called stash and dash. So she would deliver to people's homes and text them that it was on their doorstep.
Yeah, we got a partial waiver during lockdown from our governor that I was allowed to, that's how we were allowed to be open, as I could run deliveries. So that was exciting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Like DoorDash, people would put in an online order and they would select delivery as a shipping option and I would run it to their house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We got the waiver on the grounds of knitting improves mental health. And with people stuck at home, there was nothing better to do. And so the governor was like, yep, this fits. Here's your waiver. So we were very fortunate to be able to do that and shipping, because one time we were so locked down, if you were caught driving, you were being pulled over.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So I'd say with the virtual, the important piece is to have a plan. Don't just wing it. To have something prepared in advance so that you're ready to go. We already had the online presence. We already had an online store, web store. It wasn't robust. We only had our specialty items on, but Irina immediately put everything in the store on there.
Yeah. I think also it's important to kind of, so we've done Vogue virtual pretty much we've done virtual knitting live like every month since they started it in May. Did Maryland Sheep and Wool virtual. And then we also did virtual New York State Sheep and Wool and Stitches at Home, which was a virtual event. And Vogue, we kind of just, it's like second nature now. Like we know what we need to do. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. We log on, we do our spiel. We, you know, say our bit, we show our little, you know, a few photos of the sheep and our samples and stuff. Maryland was the first one that we did, and we ran it more just like I do Facebook Lives. That's kind of what I started it over lockdown. Instagram Lives, I don't find to be necessarily, you don't get as many views, but I think it's because our Facebook our Facebook page is more so linked to people who are actively shopping at our yarn shop, and like they need to see, oh, they're closed because of inclement weather, or, you know, they just got in this sort of thing. And, you know, whereas our Instagram is more like behind the scenes and people who want to like really see the story. So I did Facebook Lives. And so we ran that as a concept for Maryland Sheep and Wool. And it was amazingly successful. You know, I did Saturday and Sunday. So I think I did three presentations on Saturday, and it was like one presentation about our Yorkshire Medley yarns, one presentation about all the different flock yarns we had just received, and then another presentation about samples that we had in store. And then on Sunday, we did a like 1 hour little flock talk section actually at our farm. And so that was a ton of fun. And then like Vogue definitely feels, we have that a bit more rehearsed for sure. And Rhinebeck was a mix of, we decided to go with a modified schedule. Like we did some sales, but mostly it was like Q&A, and like we were mucking out the stalls on the Sunday that we were there for that we were at home for Rhinebeck. And like I did a fleece skirting demo because I had to get stuff up to the mill because we had just shorn. So it was kind of nice to go to do things like that. But I mean, overall, the virtual festivals have gotten less scarier. I feel like you kind of know what to expect now. And I think that definitely helps. Like the more you do, the easier they become, which I think is true for anything. So yeah. And the travel costs are nothing. Our 2020 travel expenses have been, I called my mom. I was like, we really have like no travel expenses because Maryland was meant to be our first show of 2020 and that didn't happen. So it was great. We saved so much money on that this year.
Yeah. I didn't think about that, all the costs that it goes into travel to all these events.
And the nice thing about the virtual is we're reaching people from Hawaii, a lot of California, people that never could have seen us otherwise. So that's been nice.
Yeah, I've never been to New York Sheep and Wool. And so it was nice to do the virtual one. And right. I got to take your class for the Love of Long Wools. And I absolutely loved it. And it was so cool that I got to take those classes, because otherwise it's always been a goal of mine to make it to New York, but I've always had really little ones, so I haven't been able to travel too far.
Right.
So, you know, it's nice that that was the positive of the virtual, that people from all over could come to it.
Yeah. Yep.
For sure.
And that's what we loved about it too, is that I don't know if it was that talk or one of the others I did. I had someone from Australia.
I think it was the long wool.
Yeah. And it was like, holy smokes. I mean, that just wouldn't happen ordinarily. So that's been the blessing of the virtual, is the expansive nature, but you don't get to touch the sheep, smell the sheep, feel the wool. So someday you'll have to make it to Rhinebeck. It is really spectacular. And it couldn't be a prettier time of year because all the leaves are changing.
Oh yes, that's definitely a goal. I'm like, as soon as things open back up, I am going for sure. Well, I would love to know, what is each of yours favorite fiber craft?
Well, that's a tough one, isn't it, Ray?
Oh man. Yeah.
Listen to us.
I would say that mine is knitting, only because it was the first craft I ever learned. And it's the one that, even if I'm kind of just like, ugh, I don't want to do anything, I'm exhausted, I can still get in a few rows. So it feels like the most accessible. And working in the shop, if I am working on something, knitting is easier to pick up, work on a few rows. But then if I have a customer that comes in and needs my help, I can just kind of drop it and I'll know where I am. So spinning's a bit more difficult to stop, stand up and move the spinning wheel out of the way. So I would say probably knitting for me.
She surpassed me in her knitting skills by the time she was 14. She is an unbelievable knitter. And it's funny because people will come to the shop, and if I happen to be there, they'll look at her and think, this young girl doesn't know anything. And they'll come and ask me, and I'll go, oh, excuse me, let me get the expert. And their mouths drop. It's like, well, I don't know how to do that. I think I'm more of a generalist overall. I would have to say that knitting probably comes first, but then it depends. I sort of rotate through things. So before Christmas, I did a ton of spinning. And then because I was making Irina and her sister fingerless mitts out of their animals. So that was important to me, that it be spun and knitted with love and connected to the land. And since, and I did a lot of felting from November onward, didn't I, Ray?
Yeah.
I was doing demos for Vogue on it, but I was having a blast too, because I could sit here in the evening, dark evenings in November and December, and just stab at wool. And I was making silly snowmen they looked like old men with hats, and even started to want to add cigars and things to them. They were really silly. And now I'm knitting again, and I dye all the time because I do the dyeing of our Yorkshire medley. So that's always fitted in somewhere. And then during COVID, I took up lamp work glass. So I now make stitch markers.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. So sorry, I'm not giving you any favorite there.
Oh, no, that's okay. I feel like if somebody asked me, I would say I'm probably the same way. I think knitting and weaving are probably my two consistent ones that I do, but I kind of rotate too, where I'll do a little spinning here and a little bit of dyeing here. So I can feel you on that.
Yeah.
What is your favorite, and you can have more of one of these too, but favorite characteristic of wool? What just is your favorite thing about it?
I'll go first because I have the short answer. Jerry can list literally everything. I love the fact that every breed of sheep gives you a different finished look when you have worked with it. And so that's what I love about wool, is how individual it can be. So I guess I really am more so of a product knitter, because I love talking about like yarn construction and how the different yarn construction will change the garment that you're working on. And so for me, it's the different, you know, the long wools versus the fine wools versus like, you know, the medium grades and stuff. I love how even though wool does so many things, it's so individual, you know, across the different breeds of sheep. So that's my answer. Mom, what about you?
I'm going to give you a short answer and say memory.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. I guess, well, see, now I'm going, but I could also say, well, memory, the fact that it wants to take back those inherent properties that differ from sheep to sheep. And that's where Irina's right. I can talk to you forever about micron counts and whose sheep gives you what. But yes, the memory. Unlike, you know, cotton t-shirts, I grew up the softer, the better. But then they would stretch and stretch and grow and never go back into shape. The fact that wool does that is marvelous to me, and that it's biodegradable. So it goes back to the earth. That's also something that's important to me.
Yes, it's such a special fiber. And Irina, you were talking about the construction, and I would like to know, do you two have a favorite type of garment or accessory that you like to knit when you're working with long wool yarn?
Cabled sweaters all day, every day. Right, Mom?
Yes, but I love ferrule and color work. Okay. So I'll do more of that. Even though I know that the textured stitches show up nicer, that tends to be my favorite thing. But with long wools, cables, texture, and more cables.
But the long wools look really good with the color work as well, like with ferrule knitting as well.
Because of the sheen, I think.
Mm-hmm. Captures the light differently.
And do you guys have any new or exciting plans with your flock or with your yarn shop for 2021?
Well, we had them for 2020. Do you want to talk?
We're hoping, it depends on how vaccines are rolled out in Pennsylvania, but we're hoping to maybe actually do like an open farm event fall, maybe in the autumn. We'll see. It depends. It's still, everything is so up in the air, and Pennsylvania, we're not doing too hot with our numbers. So yeah, we're just hoping to keep on keeping on, maybe some virtual open farm events in the future. But we did have a bunch for 2020. We had some eco dyeing, eco printing classes, some wet felting classes scheduled, wool skirting classes. We had a whole calendar of events, some open farm days, like tea parties with the sheep. We had a whole bunch of events scheduled, and then COVID happened and shut us. Well, it's not that we got shut down when we were going to run them, but we're number one goal is health and safety. So right. We didn't feel like it was appropriate to let people onto our property and, you know, have potential spread and exposure. So once, you know, vaccinations roll out and we feel a little bit safer with everything, we're hoping to do that. And I think really we have the, you know, two ewes lambing in the spring. So that'll be exciting to get some more colored Shetlands running around. Or they could turn out fawn. I don't know. It depends. We could have totally normal looking babies. It depends, you know. But yeah, I think just still, you know, spreading the long wool love, I think, is our number one thing for 21 for sure.
Yeah, it really, we were so excited for 2020 because we thought that it would bridge the gap for people between the yarn and the actual sheep themselves by allowing them to come onto the farm and see who grew their fiber for them and see what it takes to raise them. And Irina and I actually renovated our barn ourselves. We were so proud of ourselves, making it look pretty for all these classes. And so those dreams aren't gone. They're just delayed.
Right.
That's okay.
And they might be 2022. We don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll just get over this COVID, you know, thing. And then you know what? You guys will have it all.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And we're so fortunate that we're still able to, A, you know, have the sheep. It's not like, you know, mm-hmm. I know that some farmers I follow in England, they actually like rented like, you know, summer caravans and like stayed on their farm during lambing last year because they weren't even allowed to travel. So like, we're fortunate that, you know, nothing's going to happen if I drive to the farm to take care of the sheep in the morning or whatever. And that our yarn shop is open for walk-in, although online is always highly encouraged, but it is still, you know, possible that if somebody really just needs a needle this instant, they can hop into the, they can hop into the shop and check out there. So, you know, we're grateful.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, before we go, would you like to share your website and your social media so where the listeners can find you?
Yeah, so our website is www.flyingfibers.com. You can also find us on Facebook as Flying Fibers. You're going to see a total theme here. And for Instagram, if you want to see like shop and the yarn making process, I would say that whole kind of thing, you can find us at Flying Fibers. And if you want a lot of wonderful barn and farm photos and animal photos, you can go follow Flying Fibers Jerry, J-E-R-I, on Instagram. And then we do have a Patreon page as well, which is like first looks behind the scenes. My patrons get to like meet the lambs before the public do, you know, and stuff like that. So we do also have a Patreon as an additional thing just for more sneak peeks. So.
And there is a Flying Fibers Flock on Facebook. That's the same as Flying Fibers Jerry on Instagram. That's more the animal side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me on the podcast today and for all that you shared and for all that you're doing for the sheep and wool community.
Thank you very much, Casey. It was so kind of you to have us on today. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, thank you.
I love that you can hear in Jerry and Irina's voices just how much they love their sheep and the sheep and wool community, and that their mission is preservation through education. I think it is amazing and so wonderful, and I had such a great time chatting with them. I will have Jerry and Irina's social medias and their website linked in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Until next time, take care and keep creating with fiber.